Can you hear me?
Yes.
That's what I'm not quite sure if you could hear.
Oh, I'm getting quite loud. Quite loud. You're Scotch.
I'm not Scotch now, but I was when I was on your side. It was a long time ago now, but of course, he has no nationality in that sense. No. But as I come back to Earth, I put up a foot vibration of my own sleeve, but that's a long time ago now. Hello.
Yes,
you must forgive me if I don't do too well.
It's
a long time now since I came back. You know, I felt if I could possibly have a few words with you, but I feel a little bit shaky about this. I'm not very good at this.
Well.
At the moment, it's a long time since I last came through. It's John Brown.
Oh, John.
Aye, it's quite a while since I came and spoke, but I just felt that it'd be nice to have a few words if I possibly could. Because
yeah.
I know quite a bit about this sort of thing, as you know.
Yeah.
But when you've been here as long as I have, you get in a wee out of touch. You lose to some extent the interest of Earth naturally. But at the same time, occasions when I feel drawn back, and I feel at the moment very drawn back because, well, I don't know if I should say this, but I think you're going to have very shortly a member of the Royal Household joining us. And in a way, that has some little effect on us coming. Not only me, but one or two other members of the family from this side are drawn closer to Earth. We have a feeling that it can only be a matter of perhaps a few months if that. But that's not the real reason why I come. But I'm just telling you this now because it'll have some sort of effect. You know, it'll be an interesting taste, I suppose, you know, from your point of view. And I know, being myself a medium in the past, how interesting and important tastes are. Although, after a time you get a little tired of them. People always want more and more tastes. Anyway, I don't want to talk about the past so much.
All right, John, we've been very pleased. Whatever you've got to say, John. Anything you like?
You know, Victoria was very interested in this subject.
Yes, you told me that, of course.
Yes, and her spouse, her husband, you know, it was a great desire to make the contact with him, and that's, as you know, the story. Of course, all her diaries and everything were destroyed, which was a great pity because she kept meticulous diaries of all the things that appertained to. In fact, she had special little books that she kept with all her messages and things, and she'd often read them. We were very close in this work.
Yeah.
Although, of course, in her position, she had to keep it very dark. She knew how to make it public only like that. And we used to have these little seances from time to time with Osman and other pieces. But that's going back a long time, and we know what to say about old history. If you could see now, as I see on this side, you realize that coming back to Earth and talking about material things is no a very happy thing in a wee. You see, all those things are so remote now, and life here is so vast and so tremendous and so full of excitement, and there's such joy to be had here, and so much to know and to learn, and so much to see and to do. And when one thinks back on the old days, although one's grateful for the experiences, and life on Earth is important, we have to realize that, and we learn from things. But nevertheless, all that seems remote, and coming back to Earth after our life here, everything seems so dull and drab and grey, and the atmosphere around the world is so dreadful, and appalling conditions too. Of course, we feel drawn in a sense, and there are some, of course, and I admire them tremendously from this side, who devote so much time. They indeed, they come back and again and again and again and try to inspire and influence people and try to help the world. And one has great admiration for those people, of course. The crowds of people at this time all around the earth trying to influence for good. Because things have changed. changed beyond measure in your world. When I think back to England that was, and to now, of course I appreciate that in some respects there's been progress and things have changed for the better, especially for the poor people. But when I think back to those great days when I was associated with a cot, and I hear the position of trust, and I feel sure that I can say with absolute honesty I never broke that trust. A lot of people just don't understand or realize. A lot of people dislike me intensely, and a lot of people were afraid of me, too, as strange as it may seem, and a lot of people thought I took great liberties. But then I know taking the liberties. I know a lot of people, they wrote things about me and they tried to give a false impression. And Amaisi, she was always so kind and so good, and she had great regard and respect for me too. At the same time, there were people in high places who tried to suppress a great deal and tried to do an upper harm, but that's no for me to talk about it.
Could you tell us about that as your own sign of life?
There's so much that ought to be said about this sign of life. As you no doubt know, a great number of souls at different times are given their different ideas and interpretations of their life here. And of course we must appreciate this when we realize the vastness of the world of this life, because we must no think in a narrow term. When people talk about our world, some people seem to limit it to one particular condition or phase of existence, and it's no, you see there are thousands, you might say, of different grades or environments. What one person may say may not necessarily altogether tally or another, but that's because they can only tell you and their experiences according to their own experience and light. But I have been through various different grades, if you can put it like that, or levels of the life here, and the appreciation of different conditions makes one a wiser and a more happy person. You can no enter into a high plane of existence here until you yourself have merited it by experience and by going through different experiences on different levels of thought and ideas. You learn a great deal in each particular phase of your existence, but there's no easy path, there's no easier route. Some people seem to think that they come straight to heaven, and other people seem to think that they go straight down to another place. Well, actually, in a sense, it's not so. Everyone makes their own environment by their own thoughts, and they create their own environment by the way in which they have lived on earth. In other words, you get what you deserve. It's a case of, as you sow, so shall you reap. But when I first came here, I found myself in an environment which, I must admit, I was rather surprised, because I would not have expected it. And that was an environment which, although a happy one for me, at the same time was in some senses rather different what to what I'd have expected. I found myself in a place which was in some ways very like the earth. Indeed, in many ways, perhaps when you come to think about it, we had the most wonderful surroundings of mountains and the scenery was magnificent. In some ways it was no unlike Scotland, and indeed it was very like, and the animals roamed free, and there was no fear. I suppose the thing that amazed me first was, in spite of my knowledge of the subject, that is, that I would find myself in such a situation, because I met not only people that I'd known, but many people, of course, that I'd known. And I was placed in a very small house. Perhaps this sounds strange, because I'd been used in the latter years of my life living in great palaces and great houses and holding a position of responsibility. At least I felt it was a responsible position. But here I was living. I was taken to what I suppose you'd call a wee cottage. And I know this sounds odd, but I wouldn't say I was resentful. But it seems strange that when on earth I had been associated with great houses and in such a position, that I'd be placed in a small cottage. I found it very difficult at first to adjust myself to a small place. Although things after a time was difficult, because at first I thought to myself, why should I be put in such a small place, and I've been used to such three houses. But I realized afterwards it was necessary, because although I'd fulfilled a work, no doubt, in which I'd been sent on earth, although I did not realize it perhaps fully at the time, and like most human beings, I was known without my faults. And I realized it was necessary for me, after a time, to adjust myself to the simple things, and to learn to do without certain things that have become second nature. I suppose, but in a nutshell, without perhaps fully realizing at the time, I had become a wee bit, shall we say, not being, but perhaps I hadn't thought myself too important. This may sound a little odd, but I'd adjusted myself, I had learned to adjust myself to living a simple life, and accepting the fact that I was, in a sense, not an important person anymore, and that it wasn't necessary for me to be surrounded in a great luxury and great position and so on. And at first I felt a little bit unsettled. I thought, well, I could not understand this, why it should be placed in such a wee place, such a wee cottage. And then it came back to me gradually. It was the simplicity of the life, the simplicity of the place in which I found myself, it was necessary for me to rid myself of these ideas that had become second nature. And of course also, perhaps I should not say this, and yet if I'm talking the truth to you, I must say these things. I've been in the habit of drinking very heavy, especially the last few years of my life. And there's something I had to eradicate from myself. I had to learn to live without drink, without whiskey. And here, of course, it was impossible to have that. And here I had to learn to throw aside from myself all the worst aspects of myself. And there would be various people that would come and meet me, and various people that would come and help me too. I would not like you to think that I was unhappy, or that in any way that I was placed on a low sphere, because that's not so. It was just that I had to learn to appreciate and to realize the simple things, and to thrust from myself the grandeur and all the aspect of the material to which I've been accustomed. These things, which I'd never been used to in my youth when on earth, had gradually become second nature, important people and places, and the association with Her Majesty, all this had, to some extent, given me a false sense of pride, a false sense of values. And this I had to learn to shed. And therefore, by being placed in these humble, simple surroundings, was necessary for me. Of course, over here there are great palaces. There are great buildings, anyway, that you could see that there are palaces. But they're not lived in by great, noble people, or great kings or queens, because here you learn realities. Here, death, you might say, is a great leveler up of people. You realize that it's unimportant what you were on earth as to what your station in life was. It's what you yourself were that counted, whether you yourself were a real person, inasmuch that you had real values and real appreciation of the things that mattered. And of course it is necessary quite often for people who have lived in a state of affluence, where they have become, as it were, so accustomed to these things, which has given them false values and false ideas. And indeed, since I've been here, I've met many great personalities, people that indeed some of them I've met on earth, who had been, because of their position in life, sometimes narrowed in their views, and sometimes indeed very unkind and very unjust, and sometimes indeed very cruel, and who had no sympathy or understanding of the poor, and indeed had never had to suffer at all. And here they had to learn to appreciate the things that really were vital and important, things which they never were able, because of their condition or station of life, understand. In other words, there is, you might say, almost a plane of understanding, a plane of rehabilitation, a plane of the experience which is essential for certain peoples, particularly to shed themselves of false values and ideas. And there is this plane, which in itself is very beautiful, but it's a plane, I would say, if I can use an expression, of simplicity. And it is a plane to which many people come, who by the very nature of their earthly existence, find it an essential thing, where they can shed the false values and the false ideas, the trappings of fame, and the trappings, shall we say, of position and wealth. They have to learn to be people in the highest sense, the right sense. They have to learn the values of living and knowing truth. Because, you see, although it sounds a hard thing to see, it's easier for a poor person to understand truth often than a rich person. With me, it wasn't a matter of finance or money and this sort of thing. It was a matter of being taken from my station of life, placed in a highly evolved station of life, very close to a great personage. And although being used for spiritual work, at the same time, I'll be quite frank about this, I was not a spiritual person. I'm not saying that I was a hypocrite. Indeed, the fact that I'm admitting, and I never covered it up when I was on your side, that I pretended to be a spiritual person. I was a very earthy person in many senses, but endowed with a great gift. And that is, of course, well placed in many mediums, unfortunately. They have great spiritual gifts, great spiritual qualities, which can be used for good. But they in themselves are not necessarily bad people, but they are inclined to be very materialistic and very earthy. And of course, in my particular association, Her Majesty, I had, from an ordinary common man, been placed in a position where, quite frankly, my word was, in a sense, strange as it may seem to say now, lure. Quite often, when I'd had a few drinks too, I'd be a bit rude and a bit brusque with people in high places. And of course, quite naturally now, I see that they resented it. But sometimes I rather gloried in my power. I realize all these things are bad now, but at the time, I suppose, with the regard and the affection that the Queen had for me, and the fact that, well, I was able to do such a great deal for her, comfort her and her grief, and help her too. And sometimes, I tell you this, that in our communications, she would be given advice in regard to things of importance to do with the state. Many suggestions and ideas that were put by Her Majesty to give to the government of the time were things that had come through. In fact, sometimes when she was puzzled or uncertain herself, she would ask advice. But perhaps I shouldn't say all these things now. But what I'm trying to convey is that we must, above all things, when we come here, face ourselves, possibly for the first time, and see ourselves as we really are. And I was living, when on earth, in a sense, in a world of delusion. I had begun to accept this state of being to which I had been unaccustomed as my natural right, and I had also used to some extent my power. I don't say in an ulterior way exactly, I don't mean that, but at the same time I had allowed it to become an overpowering thing, and I realized that given such a trust, given such a responsibility, which there's no doubt was a great responsibility, perhaps in a way it may have had some effect which in a way caused me to drink even more than I should have done. Her Majesty was very patient and very tolerant. Indeed, I think it is that she realized how necessary I was to her, and in consequence she overlooked a great deal, because she frowned very much on drink. But I'm afraid I was subtle too, in regard to the fact that I wouldn't drink when I knew that I might be in close association, because there were times when we were very closely linked, and other times when, to some extent, not that we were separated, but certainly there were times when I didn't see her quite so often and so on. Now this is a long story, but over here it's necessary very necessary to go through a period of adjustment, readjustment, to assess oneself, one's given opportunity in various ways and time to resort, as it were, oneself, to see oneself as one really is. In fact, when you come here, you see yourself as you really are for the first time. And it was very necessary, to put it in a crude manner, for me to be taken down a peg or two. You know, I think I had, and I know now, of course, that I had risen too far above my station. I don't mean in the sense that some people would say station, although there again, in a sense, it's true, my station in society, because I was never accepted by society. And I think, quite honestly, there's one thing that galled me more than anything else. I think there's one thing that probably caused me to become a difficult man, as some people would say. And these people would treat me in a very snobbish way and look down my nose. And sometimes they'd be so rude to me that it brought out the worst in my nature too. And of course, this all added fuel to the fire. And that's why, you know, they destroyed a lot of things that pertained to me. I could tell you a great deal, but you know, do perhaps. In any case, I don't want to appear resentful, because I'm no resentful at all.
Very interesting.
John, are you still living in the same
classroom as Costa Rica? Oh, no, that's a long time ago. I mean, I'm talking about when I first came here, when I went through this period of this phase of readjustment and had to sort of, I suppose, very crudely brought down the peg or two and had to learn to live a simpler life and to live in a smaller place and accustom myself to these things and the natural things, which to a great extent had been taken away from.
How are you living now,
John? Oh, I live now with various other friends and people that I've known over here, some of them that I've met here, in what you would call a great place of, I don't know how you call this, there's no hotel, I don't mean that, but it's a place where many people live. It's a magnificent building, and it's a kind of hostel, perhaps you could say, and yet it's no that, because it's not so much a place where people stay a little while and move on. It's a place where many people live together who are in harmony and have much the same thoughts and ideas. In other words, they're much on the same plane of evolution of thought. And because people like to be with people, and also we have great places here attached to the building, set in parkland and beautiful surroundings, trees and lakes and so on, where we have recreations and interests, and we have great temples. I don't call them temples, but there's no really describing them. But they're places of learning where you can read anything that you want to read, even from books that were written centuries ago on earth, and books of great authors. Everything here is reproduced exactly, identically. And if you want to go back and read, perhaps even, I know this may sound stupid, but it's true. Great novels, for instance, Dickens, who I know very well, a great friend of mine, Charles Dickens, whom I've got great admiration for, because if ever a man did a great deal of good, he did by his books, because he brought to the notice of the people in higher places the dire poverty and the dreadful things that were happening with the poor, and in his own way he did a great service, and he's a very great friend of mine. And also I've met other contemporaries too, and here in these great libraries all the great books are listed, you know, and you can read if you wish. But then again, there are other places that one can go to, and you can sit with thousands of other people in a vast auditorium in the open air, and you can listen to the greatest music by the greatest composers and new works. And also, not only do you hear, but you see. It's as if, as they make music, the picturization that you might see of their music is registered in the atmosphere, and you can see what is being conveyed in a visual form as well as by sound.
Can you sort of describe, John, the visual form? Is it difficult for you to describe it?
Well, I think what is very important to explain here is that whatever transpires in any form here is obviously for the good of all peoples. And nothing here is trivial. The true realities one has left behind on earth are of your spheres. As I said before, you go through various planes of evolution, and on the plane of reception or the plane of reassessment, if I can use expressions of planes or give them names, you shed yourself with many thoughts and ideas that are no longer very valuable, never were of any true value to you, and you begin to enter into the planes of realization, and the planes of truth, and the planes of spiritual achievement and progression and attainment. And you see not only things of the past, and things appertaining to the lives of others, but everything that is given, everything that happens, everything that transpires, is educational in a spiritual sense. And when you listen to great music, you are listening not only to the musicians or the composers, idea of sound, or sounds that would convey something of what is in his mind, but you're actually able to see this. For instance, if a great musician was composing a piece of music that represented the evolution of man, then you would see the picturization, what was actually in his mind and what was actually represented in the music. You would see the creation of an individual, for instance, or if you like, the life, maybe on the earth, or maybe even beyond the earth into other spheres, of the evolution of the individual. All this, of course, is extremely difficult to explain. For instance, if a person wanted to see, and this has nothing to do with music, mm-hmm. if a person wanted to see what life was like in ancient times, see in Egypt, then it would be possible, and indeed it is possible, to be able to enter into a thought force of vibrational picturization of incidents appertaining to a certain period of time in history. And an Egyptian, for instance, who perhaps had held a high office or place in that period of time, would, by his own thought force, be able to convey to as many people as would want to have that experience and know of this particular time or period of history, would be able to see by the vibrational thought forces that he would create in the atmosphere, and masses of people could see, for instance, his life. Indeed, one of the things that one does here, indeed one does it in a sense almost unconsciously, we all learn from each other, and therefore it may well be that a certain person who has begun to make progress here has learned from his past existence. His life can be, as it were, put into the atmosphere for people to learn, because we can learn from other people's mistakes, we can learn from other people's lives many things which are often necessary in our own. For instance, we take something from each other. We don't necessarily know exactly or realize how we do this, but we do, even on earth, subconsciously and consciously. All the time we are taking from other people thoughts and ideas. Sometimes we accept them fully, sometimes we don't understand them and we reject them. But in the realization of the human element in human beings and the evolution of the human soul, we are all complex-like creatures. We like to imagine that we are separate. We like to imagine that we are individuals, that we are separate personalities. In a sense, this can be considered so. But really what is happening is that we're composite inasmuch that we're learning and experiencing in life, whether it is in your world or this, all the time from each other. We are taking from this and that and so on. And we're evolving in consequence to becoming more and more, in a sense, fully evolved souls. And there's a difference between a soul and an individual body or an individual life. But you see, when we realize that we are, in a sense, only evolving according to what we are assimilating and what we are taking from life, whether it is in your world or this, and all this that constitutes our life is, in a sense, what is part of other people's lives. Other people are telling us, other people are explaining to us, other people are showing us. We may not always see it, we may not always know it, but it's there. Sometimes when we're good listeners, sometimes when we're good pupils, we learn from our teachers, and we gain from what we have learnt. And so it is here, all the time, we are learning and we are expressing a great deal of what we've learned to others. We're giving and we're taking. We are evolving and we are becoming. We are all, as it were, becoming greater in our evolution and our realization of things. In other words, we are becoming more perfected. And I think it is this realization of the necessary evolution that must take place for every human being. No one must feel that they've ever accomplished or achieved everything. Always there are new things to learn, new experiences to experience. That is life, and that is what it is meant when people talk about the continuity of life, when they talk about coming into a new understanding or realization. In other words, it's the only thing that makes sense. It's these people who have these strong, narrow views that are the drawback and the bugbear to humanity. These people who would close your minds to truth. These people who would not allow you to believe anything else than what they believe. Who would only allow you to accept what they accept. These people who are so sure within themselves that they have the truth and no one else has any aspect but themselves, and unless you believe as they believe, you can never be saved. These people who have narrow views and narrow ideas and who have never thought deeply about these things, never allowed their minds to be open to receive any aspect of truth other than that which they already accept, these are the dangerous ones. These are the people that hold back progress spiritually, mentally, and in every sense. We who come to you, we can each give to you, according to our life, some picturization, some idea of the reality of life and the reality of spirit and the possibility of that which is even beyond us. We can open up the doors of the mind, but we cannot push things into you unless you yourselves are willing to receive. But so many people in your world have got doors firmly fastened, booted and shut against us. And that is a tragedy. If you go here or you go there, where you think that you'd be welcome, where you think they'd have a glimmer of understanding, you quite often find that their door is more bolted and barred than this is. That is why when we can come to people who have no strong fixed views, no strong religious convictions, when their minds are free and uncluttered, then we can get somewhere near them. There we can impinge some of our thoughts and ideas. There we can give them some aspect of truth as we know it. But until man realizes that he must evolve slowly and gradually, painfully, but nevertheless surely, through many vicissitudes and many conditions, that is not easily come by. You do not discover truth easily. You have to fight for it, you have to work for it, you have to struggle for it, and you have to give up a great deal for it. Especially in the material world, you have to realize true values, and you have to realize that if you want truth, you've got to work for it, you've got to sacrifice for it, and it will not come easy. And truth will only come to those who are humble in mind and humble in spirit. And the more humble that you are, the more the likelihood is that you'll have truth given to you in such a way that it will make you really free. You know that people in your world, as we come back to them, as I come back to them, I realize more and more how difficult it is for them to appreciate and understand, and how necessary it is for them to be receptive. In your world, it is becoming increasingly more and more difficult for people to be receptive. They've got so many things to occupy their mind and their time, so many distractions, and their minds are cluttered up with all sorts of things that are no real value to them at all. And when they come here, they've got so much to unlearn, so much to cast away from themselves, and so many people who build up castles for themselves, either materially or mentally. They find that when they come here, they've got to learn to be humble, they've got to learn to thrust a lot of things away from them, and they'll find that it's necessary, like I did too, in spite of my knowledge and experience of things, that it's necessary to be, as it were, thrust or placed in a place and in an environment where simplicity is the keynote. And indeed it is true to say, it is in simplicity that you find greatness, greatness of vision and greatness of ideas, greatness of life itself. Until you cast from yourself all the old material things which have held you down for so long, until you can see the beauty in the simple things of life, in nature, and in all the things that are truly of God, and in all the things that are truly of eternal spirit. The fundamental truth of spirit is what everyone should be aiming for. But in your mind there is no real balance. Everyone is running here and there, hither and hither, after the toys, after the things of no account, after the little playthings which they know full well they must leave sometime. And so it is, as I look back on my own life, in spite of the knowledge that I had of communication, although I was used as an instrument, I realized that my biggest bugbear was myself. And this is almost the truth of every human being. Everyone, without realizing, no doubt, but nevertheless it's true to say, is their own enemy. It's not the other world, man. It's not the outer world in the sense that your enemy. It's yourself. Yourself and yourself alone. You must be responsible to yourself. No one can do this or that for you. You must do it yourself. You can get away from yourself. And when you find your real self and you understand your real self, then you begin to wake up. And you begin to live, and you begin to become something of importance in the true sense, not in the wrong sense. We've got to find our true selves, and we've got to analyze ourselves, we've got to pull ourselves to pieces, we've got to criticize ourselves, and we've got to see to ourselves, I must now think this, and I must now do that. I must think not of myself, but of others. But when I start to think about others and forget myself, then truly am I beginning to find myself, my real self. And that's what I'd see to the world. And that's what I'd see to all those particularly who are interested in this great truth, who are seeking truth, who are anxious to be instruments in the highest possible sense. That they to do this, if they want to be instruments, if they want to really become truly instruments of divine grace, and to do the work of the Most High, and link up with the highest souls whose purpose is for the good of the world, then they've got to unthink a lot of things. They've got to come squarely face to face with themselves, and they've got to begin to sacrifice themselves, and they've got to forget themselves, and find themselves in their efforts for others. It's only when you're humble, and when you're prepared to give and give, and give a little more still, that you really become truly an instrument in the highest sense. My great fault was, and I quite freely admit it, that I allowed my position and my success in high places to ruin, to some extent, my character. And yet, I had a great gift. And I used that gift, and I'm glad that I was able to use that gift for a good cause. I brought happiness, and I brought comfort. But at the same time, one's got to realize there's even more than that. Too many spiritualists are concerned with bringing happiness of a material kind, and also bringing comfort in a sense of a material nature, rather than for the spiritual upliftment of others. Too much is given to the material aspect of this truth, and very little is given to the true spiritual possibilities, which are tremendous. If all instruments would seek for spiritual achievement and attainment within themselves, then truly their mediumship would be of a great high order, which would indeed truly save the world, and would truly bring peoples together in love and in harmony and in brotherhood. For that's what we're trying to do. Break down the barriers that exist between our world and yours, and bring forth into your world a new spirit of awareness of the things that are truly of the Most High. We have a great task, a great responsibility, and we need the instruments desperately, badly. And I know how difficult it is within your world to do these things and to live according to these laws, but I say that if you forget yourself in true service, truly the doors shall be open unto you, and the revelation that shall come, that shall enter into your world, shall be great. And many truly are those who shall be called to service in the highest possible sense, and truly shall the world find a peace that so far has not been able to find. Anyway, perhaps another time I may be able to
talk. Right,
I have to hurry,
Daddy. Was it, when you saw the music
stage,
was it in colour?
Of course it's in colour.
All colour?
Yes, of course.
Thank you, God.
The kindness of you are magnificent, far beyond your comprehension. We are not limited to the spectrum. Here, the colors are far, far, far beyond your comprehension. I am a school. I will listen to you. Goodbye.
Thank you,
Thomas.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Have a
beautiful
night.
Yes,
cheers. Cheers.